Hi, this is Newt. 2020 is going to be one of the most extraordinary election years of our lifetime. I want to invite you to join my inner circle as we discuss each twist and turn in the presidential race in my members-only Inner Circle Club. You'll receive special flash briefings, online events, and members-only audio reports from me and my team. Here is a special offer for my podcast listeners. Join my inner circle today at newtsinnercircle.com/podcast. And if you sign up for a 1 or 2 year membership, you'll get 10% off your membership price and a VIP fast pass to my live events. Join my inner circle today at newtsinnercircle.com/podcast. Use the code podcast at checkout. Sign up today at newtsinnercircle.com/podcast and use the code podcast. Hurry, this offer expires February 14th. On this episode of Newt's World, since tax day is tomorrow, I thought I'd devote an episode to some of the hidden taxes we encounter in our everyday lives. We'll look at some of the more outrageous taxes that were enacted to change our behavior. I think you'll be amazed, as I was, at some of the taxes that exist in the United States and how some of them came about. I'm pleased to welcome my guests, Elaine Parker, president of Job Creators Network Foundation, and Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform. Elaine Parker has spent years studying the tax system and how complex it is, how strange it is in some places, how invisible it is. And so it's great to have Elaine here helping us look at the hidden tax bills that shape our lives. Elaine, why don't you share with our audience your background, how you got interested in this, and what you've done to have a better understanding of taxes in America?
Thanks, Newt. I am the president of the Job Creators Network Foundation. And at the Job Creators Network Foundation, what we do is educate people on how different policies impact their pocketbooks. Taxes is obviously a huge one. And we all recognize income taxes. We do our taxes every year. We recognize our property taxes and we recognize sales tax in everything we buy. What we don't see are the hidden taxes in our lives on different products. And what people don't realize is that taxes really run downhill. You can see politicians all the time talking about raising income tax, raising the sales tax or raising taxes on corporations. And the reality is corporations don't really pay taxes. Those costs are baked into the goods of everything we buy, and they roll downhill to you, to me, to the consumer, to hardworking American families. And so people need to understand that they're really paying those increase in taxes.
Why don't we do it by going through one day in the life of the average American, what one day is like in the life of taxes. So at 7 o'clock in the morning, the first thing you might do is check your cell phone. Tell me about taxes and cell phones.
Cell phones are quite a fun product to talk about because everybody has one nowadays. When you're in the store and you're excited about this new cell phone and the salesman is selling you your package, then you walk out thinking, okay, for $89 a month, I've got unlimited talk, text, and all of those things that we're all doing on a daily basis. When you get your bill, it ends up being tremendously higher than what you thought. And all you think is, where'd that $89 a month go? And if you've got teenagers on top of that, like I do, then you've got multiple charges plus all of those taxes. And it ends up being as much as 16% more on your bill. So you're talking about hundreds of dollars a year on top of what you are already paying. And it gets to be pretty expensive.
What I'm struck with is that almost $1 out of every $5 in the average customer's bill goes to taxes. I think almost nobody knows that. And I noticed that Illinois probably has the highest taxes in the country for wireless, pay over 27%. That means out of every $4, more than one of them is going to the state of Illinois in order for you to have a cell phone.
If you live in Chicago, it's even more expensive. And that's because, if you recall, they put a bid for the Olympics. And so to do that, they actually added an additional tax to the cell phone bill to help support that bid. Well, if you recall, they didn't get the bid. Well, guess what? The temporary tax is still there. So now people are still paying this temporary tax for something the city never got. And that's what's so frustrating with politicians and taxes is once that tax is there, it's really hard to make it go away.
And then around 7:30, you turn on a morning news show on cable or satellite TV. What kind of taxes hit us at that point?
Cable bills. So cable, it almost seems like you have to be in the top 1% of income earners to afford cable these days. We've actually seen in the last decade, cable bills have really exploded in their costs. But it all has to do with the taxes and the surcharges that are really snuck into our cable bills. And we're paying for things like telecommunications equipment in libraries and schools. And so when you add the average tax onto your cable bill, your basic bill, you're paying anywhere from 10 to 13% more on that cable bill, which makes it understandable why we have all these other non-cable options to watch different types of TV, because cable has become so expensive just as a result of the taxes.
You now have paid taxes on your cell phone. You've paid taxes on your cable, you get in the car to go to work, you stop to fill up your gas tank.
It's just amazing how much the taxes can be and who's getting them, because you've got a lot of different entities with their hand in the cookie jars. Federal taxes are about 18 cents per gallon. But when you start looking at the individual states and what their tax rates are, it varies widely. They can be, on average, you'll see maybe about 27 cents across the country. But when you look at individual states like, say, New York, it's more than 50 cents a gallon. And Pennsylvania, 70 cents a gallon. Such a tremendous amount of money on top of just the cost of a gallon of gas.
Does Pennsylvania have the highest gas tax?
Pennsylvania is probably near the highest. California has got a pretty high tax, too.
So you've now paid taxes to use your cell phone, you've paid taxes to use your cable, you've paid taxes to get to work on gasoline. You decide to go to lunch. You go to a local restaurant and you order a hamburger. Talk to me about all the taxes that are now sitting on your lunch plate.
When you look at going to lunch or dinner and ordering a hamburger, the obvious taxes are your sales tax on your meal. But when you think about all the way back to the beginning of where it starts, we've got the farmer who raises the cow, has to pay property taxes on his land, electricity, water. He's got his own income taxes to pay. And then he sells the cow and it goes off to the processing plant. And they have to pay those same exact kind of taxes, but they're also paying payroll taxes to their workers. Then we've got the hamburger meat is transported to a distributor. That trucker pays those taxes, gas taxes that we've just talked about, which are tremendously high by state, and registration fees. And finally, the hamburger makes it to your restaurant that you've gone to and on your plate. And they have to pay all those same taxes that along the lines of those other stops, property, payroll, and income taxes. And all of those taxes add up. They're literally cooked or baked into the cost of your hamburger and makes everything a lot more expensive than it should be.
Talk about the taxes built into happy hour.
So when you go to happy hour and you decide you want to have a drink, if you're going to have liquor, you're going to pay more in taxes than you are, might beer or wine. Liquor is got tremendous taxes on it. Federal and state governments have their hand in the cookie jar on this one, too. They tax spirits at $13.50 a gallon. I don't normally buy spirits by the gallon. So what makes more sense to me is what we all know it as is buying it in fifths. So it's about $2.50 per fifth. And then the state tax on additional taxes that can vary as high as over $7 per fifth. If you go for beer or wine, you're going to save some money because it's not taxed quite as high. If you're spending $10 a week in beer, 40% of that is about what you're paying in taxes.
Coming up, we'll talk about the outrageous taxes that are unique and astonishing and vary state by state and city by city. I mean, one of the things that's clear at the margin is that for different reasons, different legislatures and different city councils pick on different taxes that you would not normally think really mattered. And sometimes it's ideological. I mean, for example, there's now a deep commitment that plastic bags are bad. And so more and more places charge you if you get a plastic bag. There are people who think that they're going to reduce the amount of plastic in the ocean by eliminating coffee cup lids. That's why in Colorado, the coffee cup lid is charged extra because it's actually an environmental tax. A lot of cities are now taxing soft drinks.
They do it under the guise of health consequences to try and change people's behavior. But really what they do is they literally project out, if we implement this tax, we're estimating we'll get this much in revenue, millions and millions of dollars. And many cities calculate that they'll have tens of millions coming in. So they're not expecting people to decrease their usage of the sugary drinks. And I've got a great example of that. Philadelphia passed a soda tax as well, and they had projected millions of dollars in revenue. And lo and behold, the revenue never came, but not because people stopped the behavior or stopped drinking sodas. It's because they looked at soda consumption just over the state line in New Jersey. People were going across the state line to avoid that tax. So it became tax avoidance, not soda avoidance.
I mean, how much of that public health noise do you think is actually just an excuse to raise money?
It's absolutely an excuse to raise money. And the states that are doing it, you see why. They're high-tech states already. And so they're looking for imaginative, new, unique ways to create a stream of revenue. For a state that wants, for a state that is so heavy on the health and trying to change people's behaviors with like a soda tax, they are now taxing fruit bought through vending machines. Let me start with, I didn't know you could buy fruit through a vending machine anywhere. But in California, you're going to pay a 33% tax on it to eat a little healthier.
And I will bet you if you go back in the legislature and look, you will find that the Grocery Store Association was proposing that because it was diverting business away from the grocery store. A great deal of taxation is not about a theory. It's about one group trying to gain a net advantage over another group. And so you end up with these very arcane provisions, but somebody somewhere thought it was useful. They ended up getting it adopted. Can you talk about some of the more outrageous or oddball taxes?
I'm a big bagel fan. I love to eat bagels in the morning. That's when I have my carbs. And in New York, they have an 8-cent bagel cutting tax. But strangely enough, if you don't get your bagel cut, you don't pay the tax.
So if you ask for a raisin bagel that is complete, it's 8 cents cheaper than if you ask them to slice it so they can put the cream cheese on.
So you can save 8 cents if you carry your own bagel cutter.
You have to wonder how they thought that up.
So, Newt, I have some oddball taxes here to talk about. In Florida, eager to get parents to make their kids safer, Florida has exempted youth bicycle helmets, booster seats, and other child restraints from sales taxes. So a little bit of an opposite spin there. So again, working to change people's behavior, which that's probably a little easier to do. In California, they have a high proof tax. If your alcohol is more than 100% proof, the liquor tax doubles, which is pretty amazing. In New Jersey, if you want to own a plush or fuel thirsty ride, that'll cost you extra. There's a 0.4% surcharge that's levied on cars that cost more than $45,000 or have a combined EPA fuel mileage that averages 19 miles per gallon or below. So pretty amazing what some of these taxes, these oddball taxes that are out there. In California, the marijuana dispensaries have to give equal to 2% of their sales to the poor and the homeless because it's seen as an equity issue. It's not fair that the poor and the homeless are not benefiting from the marijuana as much as the people who are paying for it. Here's another one. In Maine, anyone who grows, purchases, sells, handles, or processes blueberries, they're taxed at a rate of 0.015 cents per pound of the blueberries.
One of my favorites, though, is if you take a tethered hot air balloon ride in Kansas, it's apparently entertainment, and so you pay a 6.5% tax. But if you release the hot air balloon, it's now transportation, and so you're not taxed. So no one should ever go on a tethered balloon ride in Kansas. If you really want to ride in a balloon in Kansas, you know, make sure that they let you go. I was very struck when I learned that the champagne cost six times as much as regular wine in terms of taxes. in Minnesota, and I can't wait to see my friends out there, and explains why they all drink beer. But it's just interesting when you think, how did the legislature reach that conclusion?
Another interesting example of a tax is in Pennsylvania, they enacted a temporary tax of 10% on hard liquor back in 1936. It was to help the victims of the Johnstown flood. In 6 years, they had raised $42 million. And it rebuilt the town, and everybody was much happier. But they never ended this temporary tax, and it now accounts for 18% of the cost of every bottle of liquor sold in Pennsylvania. It's just built into the retail cost now, so people really don't know that they're paying it.
The people statewide responding to what was really a catastrophe voluntarily imposed a tax to rebuild the town. And then did nobody ever try to repeal it?
I don't know the history of it, but I do know that just in watching all of the taxes that we see enacted regularly, they don't get repealed.
The next time I go to New York, I'm going to go in and check on if I order the bagel without it being sliced, do I get my 8 cents back? Or should I pay the 8 cents in order to have a sliced bagel with my cream cheese? And just see what the conversation's like. I mean, I'd be curious whether the delicatessen's even aware of it. When we come back, we'll look at the sin taxes. What are they, and do they really have an impact on the choices we make? I'm delighted to have somebody who I've known for many, many years as an activist, a very principled warrior for lower taxes and more freedom, Grover Norquist. When you think about all the different taxes, you know, it used to be true a long time ago that we had sin taxes and that the culture at the time actually meant it. That is, if you were a local Baptist group, you know, charging tax for alcohol made some sense because you thought of it as a sin. Considering the chaos of our current culture, isn't the whole concept of a sin tax kind of nutty?
They demonize a product or a person or a group and then say, now it's okay to tax them because it's just a few. So they picked up on the idea of sin taxes where let's try and discourage people from drinking too much by having a tax on beer, wine, spirits, and making those higher and higher. Maybe people smoke less if you have taxes on cigarettes. But their real goal in life is clear when in South Carolina, the Let's Tax Cigarette people said, well, let's raise tax on cigarettes. And the governor said, fine, how much would that raise? We'll cut the personal income tax the same amount of money. And all of the advocates of raising taxes on cigarettes to protect children from smoking said, well, we don't like the kids that much. We just wanted the money. We're not interested in raising taxes on cigarettes and cutting the income tax because that would create jobs and maybe people would smoke less. We just wanted the money. We were lying when we said, let's do this because it would help children not smoke cigarettes. So the best way to discover whether somebody really thinks they're fighting sin is to offer to offset their sin tax with income tax cut. And then you find out the people who just wanted the money and thought this was the easiest group to roll.
So you could sort of pit sin taxes against sinless tax cuts.
Frankly, I think the whole challenge with excise taxes is that it's the government too much trying to direct what we're doing. You're even seeing on the question of reducing the prohibition on marijuana, California's got a tax system for marijuana. 40% of the cost of buying cannabis in California will now go to the government. So they'll keep the illegal producers in business because it's too expensive to go through the government program.
Which goes all the way back to the whiskey rebellion in the 1790s. The Easterners tried to raise the tax on farm-based corn liquor to the advantage of the big distilleries in the East who apparently had lobbyists or something. It's amazing that even in the very first term of Washington's presidency, we were already into these games. And it really just came down to, who gets the money? It wasn't any complicated moral cause.
They almost split the country east-west down the Appalachian Mountains with those taxes on the Westerners. And people thought they might go on their own or join France or something else. And then the country divided north-south on the tariff. 1832, South Carolina called out the militia against the tariffs because the North was busy screwing the South with tax structures, tariff structures. Taxes are very dangerous. They divide people. They damage the group that gets taxed. And we need to keep taxation as low as possible, as low as necessary. I think it was Calvin Coolidge who said taxation beyond the necessary functions of government is theft. It gets excessive.
When you have a clearly desirable, either very important or very popular project, you can pass a specific levy to pay for that and people will be pretty happy. So when you're saving the Everglades, virtually everybody in South Florida is willing to pay something because they understand how central the Everglades are to the quality of life for the entire state. And so these things spring up all over the place and become sort of dedicated. How do we get it done? And that happens because the general fund usually is so overdrawn that you couldn't get money out of the Florida general fund to clean up the Everglades because there's no money left. And so that's why they create these special districts and special taxes. But the other thing that happens is you get in a room in a conference committee and you need the money. And you suddenly say, oh, I got it. We'll call this, you know, the really feel good about yourself purple scarf tax. And everybody goes, that's great. That'll work. This is part of why I'm a historian and not a political scientist or a theoretician. I want to know who offered it, what the circumstance was, what the argument was, because it's often very idiosyncratic. I mean, I'm totally fascinated. The other thing that's clear is that once a government has its hand in your pocket, for any reason, it doesn't want to take it out because it needs the money. Thank you to my guests, Elaine Parker and Grover Norquist. You can read more about some of the country's most outlandish taxes on our show page at NewtsWorld.com. Newt's World is produced by Westwood One. The executive producer is Debbie Myers. Our producer is Garnsey Sloan. Our editor is Robert Borowski. Our researcher is Rachel Peterson. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Penley. The music was composed by Joey Salvia. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360 and Westwood One's Tim Sabian and Robert Mathers. Please email me with your comments at newt@newtsworld.com. If you've been enjoying Newt's World, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. On the next episode of Newt's World, on Easter Sunday, you'll meet a fascinating woman named Joan Lewis and hear about her life as an American expat living in Rome and reporting on the Vatican for almost 30 years. She has great stories to tell, especially about the times she baked cookies for the Pope.
I'm a chocoholic, so the first thing I thought of was I had made cookies for a lot of other offices and people in the Vatican. And the first thing I thought of was, well, why wouldn't the Pope perhaps like some cookies, maybe even brownies? So I made a couple dozen brownies and maybe 3 or 4 dozen cookies for the whole staff of the papal household. And I bought a beautiful box to put them all in and called his secretary, whom I knew, and said, Monsignor Stanislaw, I have something for the Holy Father, and I think you'll like it too, but I want to give it to you in person. Well, could I come over at 5:30? And so I brought the box of brownies and cookies over at 5:30, and that turned out to be the first of many times that I made cookies for a pope.
I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.